This week I'm having a chat with my friend James from Sailing Zingaro. Since we last did a podcast, which was actually exactly a year ago, we did a bit of sailing together. We did the Northern Atlantic route crossing on a big Bavaria C-57. It was his friend's boat. Not the best boat for crossing an ocean on, but it was a brilliant crossing. The crew was great. We ended up getting crew tattoos when we made landfall, which was immature but quite entertaining. So James is now chartering his Oyster 49. He's got some wild passages planned for the next year, heading out into the Pacific, the Galapagos, Easter Island, and then he's coming back via the Southern Ocean before heading over to Antarctica. So if you want to book on some of those passages, check out his website, sailingzingaro.com. If you want to follow our journey, head over to the YouTube channel for Ocean Cruisers. My wife's putting some vlogs on there about our boat and the refit, which people seem to be enjoying, so check those out. And if you want to support the podcast and these videos and the videos that my wife is making, consider becoming a patron. We're releasing the content early on there, and we're getting some chat rooms set up to build a little community, which is going to be really great. But for now, enjoy the chat between myself and James from Sailing Zingaro.
It's almost impossible to do chartering and a YouTube channel. I mean, I thought I could manage it, but it would take a workaholic.
It's too much, mate. I mean, it's not like you're doing a normal charter either. You're getting your boat ready to like literally sail around Cape Horn, across, yeah. Well, half across the Pacific, then go across Cape Horn. It's not a normal refit. Although you have an Oyster, so it should be ready for it.
Well, the boat, like physically, is okay for it. I already did all the through holes and stuff, but there's a lot of systems on this thing that are old, man. And you know, my fridge has been on the fritz for a long time. I finally ripped that out. My toilets, ripped those out. Yeah, lots of stuff.
Electrical, mate. No matter how good the boat is, the same bits that are on your Oyster are the same that's on my Juno. Like they are just going to break after a certain amount of time.
Yeah, what's going on with the Juno, man? Are you loving it? Are you hating it? What's going on?
I'm loving it, and I'm pretty sure once I finish painting the top sides, I'm going to hate it. Although I'll be happy with the result. Mate, do you know, my last boat was a Moody 34, and nothing took long because it was a 34-foot boat. When you got a 56-foot boat, like painting, sanding, doing anything, changing wires, like, gosh, it just takes four times the amount of time.
Tell me about it.
But yeah, it's going really good, mate. It's going well. I put the first coat of primer on the top sides yesterday. So I need to sand all that down. Then I've got to put some top coat on there, some finish coat, some nice blue gloss, which is going to look sweet. Doing loads of work on the interiors, new electrical, got some lithiums going in, got new sails coming from Precision.
Wow.
Ron hooks me up. Crazy. Bunch of really nice guys.
Yeah, I'm taking Daryl to Antarctica with me.
No way, he's coming to. Oh, I'm so jealous. I would love to do that. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I have more room. I want to take a professional that's been there before. But I've got enough spots for six, and right now there's three of us going. So, I mean, let's talk about it. Not right now, but
you know, like. So this is like a collaboration, the Ocean Cruisers podcast and the Between Two Sheets podcast. So yeah. we need to talk about everything. But do you know, actually, a good place to start, we need to talk about the sailing that we did together. Well, the boat wasn't amazing. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but the sail was great.
Yeah. I think you sold it already. So
Did you sell it?
I hope so. Because I'm not going to tell people lies about the boat.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he sold it for his sake, but whoever bought it, there's nothing wrong with that particular boat. I think it's just those boats in general.
No. Yeah, that's the thing. You can classify it. See, this is where it becomes hard to be a YouTuber because I want to be forthright and with all of my constituents. But at the same time, I don't want to screw anybody over. And, you know, me talking shit about Bavaria is not really, you know, there is a market for those boats. There is. They're great charter boat. They sail really well. They're great charter boats. They're great to own if you're coastal cruising, but crossing big oceans in a boat that's got a flat bottom is just not really, it's just not made for that. It's not built heavy enough. So when I'm sitting here talking about how bad the boat was, it's in comparison to a boat that costs 10 times as much and is made for ocean voyaging.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think going downwind, it would probably be okay. I was impressed with how that boat handled. So that's like a Bavaria C57 for everyone who's listening. That's a $1 million Bavaria. That's crazy that that exists. You can pay $1 million for a Bavaria, but one does exist. It's very pretty. It's a very pretty boat.
You get a lot more boat for $1 million. Actually, I think it's like $1.4 million. You get a Oyster 49 or a Bavaria almost 60.
Yeah, sure.
That's like almost double the boat.
Yeah, but I know which one I'd rather get. I'd rather get the Oyster 495.
When people ask me, like, what kind of boat, I get this all the time. What kind of boat should I get, James? And I really don't like this question. Please stop asking me that question, because it's a question that comes from a place of like, I know nothing. And please don't, like, do some research and then give me options and tell me what you're going to do. You know, if you tell me, like, hey,
yeah,
what boat should we get? Like, dude, I don't know. Like, this is a long conversation, and I want to help you, but do your own research first. It's like when you ask in the forums and they like get on you, you know. I'm doing that right now.
Well, at least come up with a short list. Like, I get the questions quite a lot as well. Like, people message me and send me emails, but it's generally like, I've got an option of these four boats. What do you think the pros and cons are of all of them? And at least, like, they've done a bit of homework. And it's just, I never get anybody sending me messages saying, like, should I get a Beneteau or should I get a Halberg Grassi? I don't get any as crazy as that. No. It's usually like a selection of, you know, some decent blue waters or some decent coastal production boats, that type of thing. So that gives me a bit of reassurance. They know what they're doing. They're not going to get out there and die anyway, because at least they know something about boats.
So if you guys are just tuning in, we both, Andy and I, took a Bavaria S57 from, you came on an Azores, right?
True.
From Azores to Gibraltar, Spain. And then you got off in Gibraltar, or you got off in Spain? You got off in Spain.
Yeah, Cadiz. Actually, yeah. Landfall was in Cadiz, eh? The main halyard blew out when we were two miles offshore.
That place is great if you ever have a chance to sail there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. It's really nice. Yeah, it's a great city, actually. Cadiz is brilliant. So I got off on Cadiz, and then you took the boat to... Did you take it to Ibiza, or did you take it to Valencia?
No. It ended up just... the owner called me and said, look, I can't do Ibiza. I really wanted to, but it's going to be better if we just take it to Valencia, get some work done. I've got a good broker that's there in Valencia that can take it over, fix all the stuff you broke, and then... just put it up for sale for me. So that's what he did. He had it painted. And
he did a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's not an accurate statement.
I didn't need to. I might have been going a little fast, but yeah. So this all goes back to what you said before. Maybe it's good downwind. Before you got on the boat from the Bermuda trip to Azores, we were following a hurricane, and the hurricane sucked in this other low pressure system that was like, you know, 40 knots or something, and we were flying. I got that boat up to 19 knots, and it was okay, but it was not good on the
it's like Imoca speeds.
you know what my girlfriend called it? She called it the front cabin. She called it the habitación de horror, which means
something,
the room of terror.
Something similar. Yeah, you know, I swear, like, I have never felt like I was in a hurricane until I went in the front cabin of that boat and closed my eyes. I contemplated taking a nap. Jiao, your Azorean friend, he actually slept in there for like, I think two or three days solid. He stayed in there for a while.
I don't think he did much sleeping. I think he was just...
He laid down. It was literally like you were in a hurricane. I mean, we were going at wind on the open ocean and there was a bit of swell, but yeah, not comfortable at all.
It was a trip. Yeah. That boat's just not made for, and that's the owner cabin is in the front. I would say if you ever go into a boat and the owner cabin's in the front, it's probably not a blue water boat. I mean, I hate to make a rule like that, but most of the boats that have like your Halberg Grassis, MLs, Oysters and stuff like that, they would never put the owner's cabin in the front.
Yeah. Well, because they're boats that are made for being on passage. If you're buying a boat that is made for being on passage, they're not going to put you in a position on the boat where you're just going boom, 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 boom every time you hit a wave. You're going to be chilling out in the back, not feeling it.
I tell you what, man, I've been on a lot of boats. I've got a lot of miles on a lot of different boats. I've owned five, and I don't even think I would ever buy a coastal cruiser just because it's so uncomfortable if you get in any kind of shit weather, you know, like if you say you want to go like to the islands with your friends for the weekend and it's 40 miles and on the way back, a big storm comes up and you got to get back for work. It's going to be so uncomfortable and the boat is going to break and like the mast is going to bend all crazy because the shrouds are undersized and everything on that boat has been built by the lowest bidder. And that's why I think it would be better. And what I suggest to people is get like a 15-year-old boat or a 10-year-old boat and get one from a manufacturing company that made it well back then, because you can always fix the pumps. And even on a new boat, you have to. But yeah, that's the
true. This is kind of why I chose my boat. I'm not saying a Genoa 54DS is a bully water boat. Yeah, mate, I honestly think that it's the best boat Genoa made. Immediately after this, they went to like charter, happy, cheapy, you know, just made it for the investment market, I think, pretty much. But mate, it's great. It's 54 forks, 22 ton loaded. It's got a bloody strong structure to it, sails really well. I think this is like the nice halfway point between what you would get. I call it a production boat that can sail offshore.
I'm interested to see what your results are going to be after a year or 5 years, because it is a Genoa still, but I've seen a couple of those cruising, and that's usually my litmus test for boats. Like, do I see them out actually cruising? And I've seen a couple of those and they're nice. They're very roomy. You can do charter on them. I mean, you have to always think about other options of how am I going to make money if I need money. Sometimes something like, what if you get dismasted? Well, I guess you can't charter at that point, but you know, what if you have a bill that's $50,000, you know, you got to like do something to make all that money. And it's good to have the option of chartering.
Yeah. It's nice to have the cabin space. It's good for that, mate. And the thing is, you know, like, I think in an ideal world, I would have probably gone for an Oyster just because they're amazing and they're British and they're gorgeous. the new ones, like the 495, the 595, they are stunning. Like, they're amazing.
Man, they're so expensive.
Yeah, they are expensive. But look, so we got this boat. This, when it's finished, when I've done all the work, when I've got everything installed, it's probably going to stand at like 300 grand, something like that. If you were going to go up from this, you'd need to double the investment. If you're gonna get a better boat than this, it would be an Oyster, and in which case it would be a 700 or an 800 grand boat.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I've got I got a pretty special deal. So my deal is not,
you got a great deal,
really good number to go on, because not a lot of people have the wherewithal to be able to buy a boat sight unseen during COVID, and you know, all I had was pictures, so not a lot of people would be able to do that, but. Getting an older boat, even if I had paid like say 100 less than list for this boat, I haven't even put 100 grand into the boat yet, and it's almost cherry, man. It's, I mean, if you saw what I'm looking at,
it's looking great now.
Definitely not cherry, but I'm getting
not right now.
Almost every system is being replaced. Almost every single system: the fridge, the toilets, all the batteries, all the through holes, all the sails, all the fabric in the whole boat. The fabric. I just got a mattress.
Got a new floor as well, though.
I'm going to plug someone right now, shamelessly, mattressinsider.com. They sent me a custom mattress for the
mattress
back.
Mattress Insider.
It's like 9 inches or maybe 10 inches or something like that, maybe a foot, and which you don't even know what that is, but half a meter freaking thick. And it's, oh my God, it's a game changer, bro. I sleep so well now. Holy crap. I'm going to recommend them to all my friends.
We'll put a link in the description for that one. I'm actually working with a mattress company as well, so I'll put a link in the description. So we're just, but actually yours is in the States, mine's in the UK, so I doubt they'd compete with each other.
And it's cool, all these mattress companies have this new machine now where they build the mattress without springs. It's just like latex foam and different kinds of foam to get the desired stiffness level, and then they put it in this like steamroller smasher thing that rolls it up and packages it up at the same time. And it comes in just a little cone. And you cut it open, you better watch out, and it just explodes into a mattress.
I don't know if I told you this before, but I actually slipped like a bunch of discs probably about 7 or 8 years ago, and I've just had back pains like ever since. And these shitty foam mattresses that you get as standard on your boat, they are horrible to sleep on. Like, they are really, really terrible. So yeah, we were going for like the what's it called, the hydro something, I'm not sure. It's the one that you get if you have a bad back, but yeah, we're going to do that because it makes a massive difference. And especially on a boat, it's actually tough to sleep on a boat sometimes as well. So having a good mattress is pretty important.
I think it's called the old man version.
That's it, mate. The 37-year-old old man with a bad back who can't get any sleep.
I got the same thing. I wrecked a bike when I was 24 and I got a bulging disc. And every once in a while, I'm like picking something up and my back goes out, which
makes me feel cold. Yeah, man, it's a pain. So I tell you what, let's talk about all the refit work that you've actually done to this boat to get it ready for this voyage, because this is your well, you did a bit of chartering in your catamaran, didn't you?
Yeah. This is my first time chartering. We did a couple charters in the cat, and I've done charters. I used to have meetup.com. Is that still around? Is that still a thing?
Oh, no, I've never heard that.
Never heard of it? It was like a place you could go and find like-minded individuals to do cool shit with. And so what I did was I started a meetup group and I told everybody, look, it's $30 for the day. Come out, I'll serve hors d'oeuvres. And we would always get like mozzarella cheese with some basil leaves and some tomato and some olive oil. And that was what I served. And I'd get like 10 people to come out sailing with me, which was $300. And at the time that was like so much money to me. And that was on my Morgan 41. I used to have a Morgan 41, not a blue water cruiser boat.
This is when you lived in California.
Yeah. I was in California at the time.
Nice.
And I forgot the point. What was my point on that?
Hors d'oeuvres, chartering.
Oh, chartering. Yeah. So anyway, I'm used to having like people paying me to come out with me and stuff. And then I've done some chartering with this boat in Aruba, just doing day charters and stuff. But this one, I thought about it a lot on like what I wanted to do. And I met a couple of the people in this field that are you know, they're mentors of mine, John Kretschmer and Ryan Renfield from Sail Libra.
Yeah.
And Vivian and Nate, which are partners.
Ocean Passage.
Ocean Passage. And I just love all these guys. I love their life. I love how they approach.
Great way to live, mate.
Yeah, it's great. And you get a lot more one-on-one time with the people that are with you, which is cool because I have a lot of distance from a lot of my fans and the people that I'm, you know, making these films for. So what my original plan was is after I met these guys, I was like, wait a minute, I can do like a hybrid of, you know, like I can use my YouTube channel to kind of sell the spots on the boat, and I can do this crazy trip. And when I decided I was going to go around the horn, and this was a long time ago, I decided this because I met five boats that were coming up from Puerto Montt after they went through the Beagle Channel. That's the west side of Chile. And they were coming to Easter Island. So I got to Easter Island and they got there a couple of days after, and they were all the coolest cats, man. They had the coolest pictures. They were the best sailors. They had good stories. And I told myself then, I was like, I need to go to Patagonia one day. So that was part of the reason of buying a monohull boat versus buying another cat, was because I really wanted to see, mostly it was the deal I got, you know, I didn't have a lot of money. So I was looking for the best boat I could for the money, cat, mono, anything. And I found this, which I'm very, very happy with. But I had told myself back then that I was going to go. And now that I actually decided to go, it was like 6 months of working and trying to map it out. And basically what I had to do was say, okay, the best time to be going around Cape Horn is December, January. So I'm going to just choose a date randomly, like Christmas. And that's the date we're going to go around the horn. And then I got to work backwards both ways. And then plan out and actually plan out a place I've never been, a schedule, which I've never had, and have people come down. And then logistically, I can take care of the logistic part of it a couple months before each passage. So that's kind of what's happening now. And it's worked out great. I've had great people. We've had a lot of fun in San Blas. There's one more San Blas trip open if this is, I don't think this will come out in time, but I've got a couple other trips on the other side of Panama once we get through the canal. And,
I'm going to put this out in 3 weeks. So there might be, when do you leave?
I go through the canal in April 10th.
April 10th. Yes, that's too quick.
So I won't be in the San Blas, but your listeners will have a chance to go to the Pacific side of Panama, or I need somebody to come with me from from Easter Island to Chile. Nobody's taken me up on that leg yet. And
I have a good one as well.
Oh, dude, it's going to be like 2,900 miles ocean crossing. It's just like our crossing that we did, except the other direction on the other side of the world and going down.
Nice.
And riding that other directional wind across. It's going to be a crazy trip. That's going to be a good one. A little bit cold.
Which was the most popular leg? Like, so obviously you put these online and people just started booking them all. Which was the one that went first?
Well, what I did was I put them out to only my patrons and the people that support the Kickstarter campaign. And I said, look, I'm going to sell 4 beds on my boat. And if you guys would like them, I'm going to give them to you first, but I'm going to give you a 50% discount, a 25% discount and a 10% discount respectively on each leg. So the first person to book gets 50, get it. And then, about a quarter of the whole trip sold out. It was great. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then the leg that sold out first was the Galapagos to Easter Island leg, because there's nowhere else in the world you can buy that. There's nowhere. No one else is.
Yeah, there's not many people. I mean, if you think like right the big now. Passage makers, like the you know, the list of people you just went through before, they're basically doing Atlantic circuits. I know John does go very high latitude sometimes, but it's mostly Atlantic circuits. You don't get many ocean passage businesses doing Pacific crossings. I don't know any, actually.
Funny thing is, John actually is just going back to Cape Horn for the first time since 1984, and we're going to meet there. We're going to be there.
Oh, really?
Time. So it'd be really cool to see each other in Patagonia there.
Has he got his boat fixed yet? Because he dismasted, like quite a few months ago on the way to Cape Verde, I think.
Yeah. I just talked to him yesterday, actually, about that. And he said, because I'm looking for insurance, different insurance. Mm-hmm. And he said he's fighting with his, which is pretty common now with boat insurance. Boat insurance is kind of tipped on its head because of all the big storms that have been coming through. With global warming comes like super storms, and we're getting more intense storms. Like I'm in San Andreas right now. They just got wiped out here. And this is the first time in like 80 years that a hurricane has hit here. Mm-hmm. So because of that, insurance is tough. And to answer your question, yes, he's got a mast coming down there, but, and I think it's going to be about another month before he can get the mast in. Cause it's, as you know, those things are crazy long. So you have to get it in two pieces and then you have to have a sleeve in the center and then drill and rivet a bunch of rivets in it and get a special rivet gun. Cause they have to be big rivets, and it's a pain. If anybody can do it, it's him though.
That's without a doubt. The location as well, like Cape Verde, like these are tiny islands that are like way off the coast of Africa. Like it's got to be one of the worst places to get anything shipped to. Well, no, maybe not. Actually, that's an exaggeration. When I was there like a couple of years ago, and a guy had a new Volvo installed by Volvo, a new Volvo Penta. And I think he put like 50 hours on it and it blew up. It was just installed wrong. I think it was something to do with a water pump, but he had to wait. I think he had to wait a year to get in.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think a year, mate. Yeah, because he put a post on a Facebook group. Somebody was like, "Oh, what's Cape Verde like?" And he was just like, "Oh yeah, it's brilliant." Like, he was just smoking weed every day. There's nothing else to do if you're in Cape Verde for that long. You're just going to get bored. And there is spearfishing. No, I don't think there is spearfishing. There is a lot of fishing. They have like world championship for swordfish or something like that. Cape Verde is one of the locations. They have massive swordfish. I think he was waiting close to a year. Wow, maybe he's got his residency now. I don't know.
It is a sailboat you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it was a Halberg Rassi. Yeah. No, it was a Naiad, actually. Yeah, it was a Naiad. And but I can imagine, like, for John getting the mast sent down there, that's going to have to, I don't know if it would have to come in its own shipping container, but like to wait for a space on a shipping container where you can just get something just that's so long taken at one corner, it would be a pain in the arse, I'd imagine.
The worst thing is John has the skill set to sail out of there with no motor, no nothing. He doesn't need anything except the mast to be able to go move that boat into another spot. But without a mast, he's totally screwed.
And he was so lucky, because like Vivian and Nate, they were buddy boating. He was buddy boating with Vivian and Nate. So that's Ocean Passages. That's the younger couple who he works with. And they pulled him in. They pulled him into harbor. If it wasn't for them buddy boating with him, who knows?
I mean, he has an engine. I just don't know if it would have lasted that long or what the deal was. But yeah, that sucks. But you know what? He's still planning on going and completing the whole trip. So I'm proud of him, man. That's awesome. I'm super excited to be so
cool. Yeah, write a book about it.
Down in my first time in the Horn and his second. He wrote a book about it.
It is
called Cape Horn to Starboard, I think. Yep.
I think you're going to have to write a book soon, eh? Well, if you were going to write a book about sailing, what would you write it about? What topic? Would it be about a passage? Would it be about cruising? Would it be about life on the water? What do you think you'd write it on? Because I imagine you'd probably be a good writer because you're a pretty creative person.
Thanks, man. But right back at you, brother. But yeah, John got me into the mindset of writing a book. When I hung out with him, he said, man, you got to write a book. It'll totally validate whatever you're doing. And you'll go to levels that you haven't even dreamt of because now you're a published author in the space that you're a pro.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, like a YouTuber or not to discount that, but you know, now you're published. So people will start to want to get your opinion on things and want to, you know, you to write for them. And I'm published in magazines, but a book is a whole different story. So I was thinking about that for the last, I don't know, year or something right after we met. And I think having a really good idea for a book would be a post-apocalyptic book about, or maybe even zombies. That'd be fun. And then the sailboat being like the perfect shit hit the fan vehicle, right?
Yeah, so
you have to find a boat and you have to like fix it up and make sure it's not going to sink. And it always trying to sink on you and shit. And zombies are trying to get in. We'd have to
almost want this to happen
on top. And then we have to find an island. I have to go get my family, right? Because I'm not near my family, so I got to go get them. And then we all get on the boat and then we go to an island. It would just be such a fun book to write.
You know, like I've had since like COVID and like with all the bullshit that goes on these days, me and my wife have pretty regular conversations about, right, what do we do when the shit does hit the fan? Because it looks like it's going to. I don't know if it's going to be nuclear war or some pandemic or whatever, but we're always, so, okay, how would we manage it? And we'd be like, just go to the boat. It's perfect. Water maker. Yeah. You can grow some herbs or some vegetables, a tomato patch, whatever, in some bucket somewhere. It's perfect. You could do it.
I don't know what herbs are, but yeah, it sounds like you got
all
the right
types.
No, I'm just messing with you because we.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with I can't remember who I was talking to about it, but and you've been to quite a few places, so you probably have a really cool take on this. If that did happen, if the world did just go to shit, you would want to be somewhere that. It's you won't want to be out in the middle of the ocean because then you won't be able to get supplies. You want to be near a country where you could get food that's relatively safe, not too many people, probably not near any cities because that would post-apocalypse, that would probably be crazy. Where would you pick in the world to just go stay, not get bothered by anyone, and you know you can get the stuff you need?
There's more to it than just that, too. You'd have to have a place that has a safe harbor for your boat. Like
yeah,
a lot
you
of
think about
place,
trade and stuff like that
you
as
would,
well.
You would absolutely have to have an island. It would definitely be an island. You can't be on the mainland. You'd have to have a place with a natural water source. So you can't pick most of the islands in the world that I've been to that are non-inhabited don't have a natural water source. So what you need to find is something that has like a semi-safe harbor that doesn't get hit by hurricanes or cyclones, that has a natural water source and isn't infested with zombies or people, I mean, or zombies.
They are the same, one and the same now.
Yeah, it'd be a fun book. I've already thought it. Yeah. You're on the right track there.
Yeah. That is pretty tough. See, I picked like because Thailand is like one of my favorite countries, and there's just loads of little tropical islands where you do get some water sources on quite a few of them, but they have hellish cyclones, so that would probably write that one off. I don't know actually.
You'd need to protect your boat because that would be your, you know, without that you're kind of screwed in that post-apocalyptic type world. So you don't want to be in a place you could lose it. But you could be in a place where, you know, cyclone season is seasonal in most places. Typhoon season is year round, but you could be in a place where you could move to like have a couple of different places. But I think if I were to pick a place, like not a not apocalyptic, just a place that I love. Makatea is probably my favorite island that has a natural water source. It doesn't have a great harbor, but you could drill in some bolts. It's like a
raised hooks for a mooring ball or something.
Yeah, it's one of those places in the world where when you're, you know, if you can throw a rock onto the island, but you're in 1,000 feet of water, you know what I mean? Like, you can just go straight down. So it's really hard to moor there. And they do get hit by cyclones every once in a while. That's like where they start.
Right.
So it'd be like Granada, you know, in if I was trying to tell, most of the world knows hurricanes and most of your demographic probably does too, in the Atlantic. They start around Granada area and then they move up in the Pacific, the South Pacific. They start like around, let's say, they kind of start forming in Pitcairn and Gambier Islands, and then they kind of move up the same way. So they rarely get hit by anything hard. If you never heard of it, look it up. Makatea is badass.
Yeah, I'll check that out, actually. I've never really looked at it. This podcast has taken a strange route. We're now talking about people turning into zombies and where we go. And...
We should be trying to tell people about the adventures that were going on. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no. I'll tell you what, mate, just like, because with regards to like the passages that you're doing in the charters, just talk through it. Like, where are you starting? Where are you picking up your first passengers? Are you taking passengers through the Panama Canal? And then where are you actually finishing this thing and calling it a day? Because you're going to Antarctica as well.
Yep. So I'm not taking paying passengers to Antarctica, just to get that off the table. Sorry, guys.
Okay. But
that's not somewhere that I want to have. I'm not covered.
That's your time.
I'm not covered by insurance during that time. And I don't want the added hardship of having people that don't know what they're doing. So I'm only taking pro sailors, which is why I'm taking Daryl. He was in the Coast Guard. He's a badass. He knows what he's doing. So what this originally came about, where I was just looking up routes and reading about Cape Horn and saying, okay, how hard is this? I've met a bunch of people that have been. So if those guys can do it, I can do it. I met a guy in Panama that took an Ultramare 51 to Antarctica, which is why I'm like, I want to go to Antarctica. I'm going to do it. If he can do it on an Ultramare, the hole is like this thick. My hole is like
an inch.
If he can do it, I can do it. Damn it. That's kind of what made me start my YouTube channel too, was that same mentality. Anyway, so you got
pissed off that an Ultramare went to Antarctica.
Exactly. Like,
this is why you're doing it.
That guy was a badass too. He was a race car driver his whole life. And when he retired, Ultramare, which is like the race car of sailboats.
Yeah.
And then he took that thing around the world and took to Antarctica. That's
good on him, actually. Bloody
what a life that cat.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I found this Jimmy Cornell article in Cruising World 2002 or something like that. And he said, you know, if you have a little bit of time, like total Jimmy Cornell, he's like, well, if you have some extra time and like to stay in your hemisphere, look no farther than the circuit of South America. And he's like making it sound super easy. Man, I'm sure he's done it a bunch of times.
Probably is for him.
Yeah, probably, right? And he's done it both ways, actually. And he said, don't ever do it the other way because you're with the wind. If you look at the wind charts,
yeah, it's true, actually, yeah.
Going to the east. So as the problem is when you're going up or down in Patagonia, when you get to Puerto Montt, that's about 40 degrees. And the Horn is like 57 degrees or something like that. I know Antarctica is 63. The tip of it, so that's 600 miles between, so yeah, 57.
So you
have a lot of distance to travel during that time, right, when you hit Chile to when you get to the bottom of it, and all the wind is contrary to you if you're going the other direction. So that's why I decided we're going to go through the canal. That trip is sold out, and then we're going to go up to Costa Rica, and I've got some space on those trips if you'd like to join us. That's going to be spearfishing galore. That's what I did that with my last boat. It was amazing. And the reason we're going up there is so we can go to Isla del Coco again. And Isla del Coco was one of my highlights from my last trip.
That's one of your favorite places, you were saying.
It's so beautiful, man. It's just one of those places where you never get to see stuff like that. You just don't. No one's allowed to go there. You have to go and get permission. It's expensive. It's a World Heritage Site. It's one of those places that's just like one of the coolest things on the planet. Mm. And I love it. I mean, going there anyway. I mean, it was just a little detour to get there. I just have to go up to Costa Rica and then down. which as you sail more, the world gets smaller. And that for me is just a little detour. And then we're doing Galapagos, which is my first time in Galapagos, because last time we went to Ecuador, refit the boat, and didn't have enough money to go to Galapagos. So this time I've sold that trip out, the Costa Rica. Oh no, I think there's one spot left. There's one spot
Galapagos.
Left. Yeah, that would be a really good one to get onto. It's expensive. It's like $7,500. And it's going
to
be
but you're having to account for all the fees and everything you have to do to the boat to actually go there. The regulations are crazy.
Yeah, I spend what you're spending on the cabin, I spent that on the agent to get me into Galapagos. So
yeah, I can imagine.
For me, it's so expensive that really it's not that big a deal. And if you know what you're getting, it's not that big a deal. It's like $350 a day or something. So
do you have to have hard antifoul to actually cruise there?
No, yeah. Not hard. Nope. But you have to have new antifoul. They're not worried about the antifouling right. So much as you introducing new life. That's what they're worried about. So you have you have to have a certificate of fumigation for the boat and a certificate of the bottom job in the last like 6 months. So okay. I'm hauling the boat out in 2 weeks and I got a bunch of stuff from Total Boat, actually, your shirt. They sent me some copper-based bottom paint, and I checked with the agent, my Galapagos agent, and he said the copper-based bottom paint is okay, and I'll just not park over any coral, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, perfect.
And then from there, we're going to right to Easter Island, so that's going to be like about a, I'm guessing 17-day crossing, 16 days, something like that, and then... Nice. From we'll be in Easter Island 2 weeks, and then we go from Easter Island to Puerto Montt. That'll be a big Pacific crossing. That's not one that normally people do.
How many days? So that's a month on the water, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's going to be at least 21 days, minimum 21 days, depending on the wind.
Yeah. So is anyone booked on for that?
Nobody. Yeah, I'm by myself right now because my girlfriend's pregnant. So
congratulations, mate.
Thanks, buddy. I'm so excited. Man. I love kids. I've always wanted to have a kid. Finally met a great girl. And yeah, Anna's pregnant. She's 4 months. She's starting to show. Everybody's like, oh my God, you're pregnant. It's such a cool thing to see. That,
mate, that's like, so nice. Energy. When we were cruising last summer, like I've got a kid. I love being a dad. I love being a husband. I love having a family. It completes your life. It makes everything worth it. And like when I watched you two and the way you interact and how you are with each other, I was like, they need to start a family. Like a little baby for those two would just be amazing. So I'm so happy for you. I think that's brilliant.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for. I'm gonna need some advice in the coming months. Okay, so just keep your phone on for me. That's what I need. Yeah.
But, so what's Anna going to do? Is Anna going to be chilling out back at home, or is she going to come on a few of these legs?
Well, just to be completely honest with you, I already sold out most of the trips until Easter Island, and if I cancel the trip now, I'm gonna be out like $50,000. Mm. So, and I already spent a lot of money on the boat to get it ready for this. So we really can't stop. So what I did was I initially planned the trip, I was planning on like staying in Galapagos for a month, staying in Easter Island for a month, staying in Isla Secas, which is on the west side of Panama for a month to spearfish, because I like all these places and they're fun and it would be fun. I was going to invite everybody down for a week that was on the passage with me, and then the new people could come a week early, and then I'd have like 2 weeks with Anna by myself. Mm. But now that Anna's leaving, she's going to go. I rented her a house in Medellin, which is in Colombia, with her family.
Yep.
And she's leaving from Galapagos to go there because she'll be 6 months pregnant by that point. And I don't want her 1,800 miles offshore when she's 6 months pregnant, because if anything happens, I would never forgive myself. So that's what's happening. She's getting off the boat. Everybody's cool with it. They know that I'm not a bad cook. I'm not an Anna style cook, but everybody will still eat well. We're going to just do like boys trip for the rest of the time. And then when we get to Puerto Montt, I'm taking a month and a half off, and I'm going to fly up. And when she gives birth, I'll be there when she gives birth, and then be there for a month with the newborn. And then I'll come back and do that by myself, do Antarctica by myself. And then probably I haven't decided when I'm going to bring the baby back, or if I'm going to just cancel on the rest of the trip. But for now, I'm absolutely going to go around Cape Horn still. So that's on.
Nice.
And I don't think it's really viable to have a newborn and do charter on a boat. So I either have to pick, do I want to be there for the baby for the first year, or do I want to finish this trip and get and make the charter thing happen?
I think you could definitely do both. I think you could time it in where, I mean, the thing is, it's like, obviously you're doing charters, so you're going to be making money through the trip. You could easily do like charter out a leg and then just fly Anna down for a month, and then charter out another leg, then fly Anna down for a month.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's one option, is fly her to the destinations, and then I take people.
Yeah.
And then the other option is she stays in Colombia and I fly up and see her between the trips, because it's really easy to fly in Southern America. It's very cheap. It's like $400 both ways. So yeah, I have a lot of options. Or we just say, okay, look, we made some money, we'll just live on this money for a while, or we'll start doing YouTube again a little heavier. And I have so many options, man. It's good. I've been in a really good place in my life to have a kid. It's just really bad timing. Like, the kid's supposed to be born when I'm on passage from, you know, like the most remote island in the world.
Yeah, pretty much Easter Island.
And I really would like to take a doula and like have the baby on the boat and have the baby in Easter Island. That'd be so cool. But I just, I'm so,
there's many years for that, mate. That
could happen.
Yeah, there's many more years for that. So is Anna like happy about the concept of being a mother, like a liveaboard mother, like traveling the world with a baby?
Yeah. She's stoked. Sweet. She really likes the boat life. She gets a little seasick now that she's pregnant. Not too bad though. Only if the seas are above like 3 meters, then she starts getting sick.
She was good on the passage we did, and that was all at wind.
Yeah, she never really got sick before. She doesn't love being on passage. She's always been the type of person that gets a little bit woozy. There's different levels of seasickness, right? Which from what I've seen anyway, I'm not a doctor or anything, but some people get violently seasick. I've had people turn green and had to turn
I've seen it.
And back off. And then some people don't get seasick. And then there's everything in between. Like, some people stay sick the whole time. Some people just are sick for a couple of days. She just goes to sleep. And it's great. It's great for me because I got the whole boat
single-handed. She just takes a nap.
Yeah, so she just goes to sleep. Like, I'm literally 10 minutes. I see this a lot, especially with women. That like, if they're the type, the sea just rocks them right to sleep. And as soon as they get out to sea, they're conked out. So that's fine with me. I don't need like gourmet meals underway. And
that's almost convenient for a sailor. Like, it's not the worst, is it?
Most people
can't sleep on passage.
Yeah, she can't really do much down below. Like, she can make a little pasta or something, but she's not going to be cleaning. And, you know, if something happens, I need to be dealing with it. But honestly, that's a very small price to pay to have someone you love with you. And you know, I'm just happy that she doesn't get violently seasick, because, you know, I've seen it before. I mean, I'm sure most of your listeners have watched Le Vagabond once or twice, and those guys had a lot of problems with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I mean, mate, I've never been seasick, so I've got no idea what it would feel like. But like, you know, when we did a charter in Greece, and actually you met them, Maddie and Herbie, they've got the YouTube channel called Rigging Doctor, lovely couple. And Maddie, like, she was vomiting every time we went out, every time we got the sails up, she was vomiting. But she was just like, oh no, I love sailing. It's great. It's fine. I deal with it.
Yeah,
like, totally happy.
Yeah, that's funny. I had a guy on one of my charters. Actually, he came twice. He's a good patron of mine. And his wife gets violently seasick. She was curled up in the cockpit on the floor, vomiting in a bag the whole sail.
Oh, shit.
But when she got there, she was fine. And she's like, look, this is his dream, and I want to be supportive of him. And we've been together 35 years. And I, you know, I don't mind, whatever. I'll deal with it. But man, she got super sick. Like it looked like she was going to puke out her.
Yeah, mate. I would hate that. I think I can actually count on one hand how many times I've actually thrown up, like, in my entire life. It's just I never get like that.
I very rarely get seasick. Usually, it has to do with like consuming too much alcohol the night before or something. But I have been sick. I got sick. I got a story for you, real quick.
Go.
I got sick on the submarine one time, at 400 feet. We had a hurricane above us. We used to go out in the Atlantic. I was stationed in Kings Bay, Georgia, and we lost propulsion. They were doing some kind of reactor drill, and the reactor scrammed, and they shut down the reactor. And the submarine always stays a little bit positively buoyant. Obviously, you'd want to.
It's a feature that's necessary.
You just get sucked right to the surface, right? And the surface, like, you know what surface tension is? Like the, surface effect for planes, where when they're landing, they almost have to like expect to go down on a cushion and it kind of cushions them. Yeah. It's called surface effect. And there's a surface effect for the water too. It kind of sucks you up. And so we're at 400 feet and we're taking rolls and we can feel this storm. And then we're at no feet and we're taking like 40 degree rolls because we're on a can. And holy crap, man. I wasn't feeling sick, but every single other person on the boat was puking. And inside this tin can, it was just puke smell. I couldn't.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's rough.
And I didn't throw up, but it was very close and I was very seasick. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be like you're on some type of theme park ride, but with the
added... It wasn't fun.
Yeah, and then the whole place stinks of vomit. No, I won't be into that.
Not cool. No, not cool.
So, what? Like, your life has just taken a pretty hefty 180, I suppose, like, over the last 2 years. You've gone from, like, just being a pirate, cowboy on the water, cruising, taking everything as it comes. You've now got a charter business set up. You're doing ocean passages. You're rounding the horn. You've got a baby on the way. This is a massive change for you, mate.
Yeah, baby's probably the biggest one. But yeah. I've gone a little bit more towards more professional kind of. How can I put it? I have these goals, right? I've always had these bucket list items that I wanted to achieve, and I achieved a lot of them on my last passage. I went to Pitcairn, I went to Easter Island, I went to the Line Islands, I saw Tahiti, and if you are an old fan of mine, you'll know that like my first video, I said, look, I'm going to take this boat to Tahiti. And I said that like 5 years before I made it, but I made it. And this time I said, I'm going to take this boat to Cape Horn. And I've kind of been doing everything on this boat with the way back in the back of my mind saying like, I better do a good job on this because this is going to have to keep me safe when I'm in Cape Horn. So now that I can actually do it, I am definitely more focused on like, okay, this is what we need for safety. This is what we need. Cause I know all that stuff, but I've always kind of been a cowboy with the catamaran. Mm. And now I have people that I'm going to be responsible for. So I need to, you know, have good equipment. I need to have updated flares. I need to, you know, like I never had that before.
Yeah. If you're cruising, man, it's like, okay, it's necessary, but you don't need it. A lot of the stuff
you don't need. You know, if you have flares from 2002, they'll probably work.
Yeah, they'll probably work.
If you're taking paying guests to one of the most peligroso areas in the world, yeah, you should probably have good flares. And so that's been a little bit of a 182 for me. But at the same time, it's a necessary thing for me to fulfill this goal. So I had to step up and I had to say, okay, it's time to stop playing the fool and start like, you know, really paying attention and seeing what I needed, which is why going back to one of your older questions, I had to do all the stuff to the boat. So I've put a new refrigeration system in it, which is not like by an angle and put it on the boat. It's like the whole system, the cold plate, the wires, the everything, the compressor. I put new heads into the boat. That was a decision I made because this boat was designed with a very high vented loop for the all toilets should have a vented loop, but the one on this boat is very high because the boat has a propensity to heel over pretty good. Okay. And a lot of it's in the water. It's a heavy boat. It's a big, heavy monohull. So a lot of it, I mean, the water line is like up to your knees when you're walking around. So because of that, they needed to put the vented loop very high, which means that a lot of water needs to go through there for it to get over that loop. So when the duct valve kind of gets old and doesn't close all the way, your pee or poo doesn't come back into the toilet, doesn't like gravity drain. No. And nobody got that. Like literally, I tried to explain that to every single crew that I've had on this boat and nobody gets it. So I just decided I'm going to get an electric toilet where I can program how much water goes through. You push one button and then I don't have to worry about it anymore.
And which toilet did you go for?
I did a freshwater Marine Elegance from Raritan. Like one of the best ones you can get. They cost about $1,250 a piece. But
yeah, that's a lot of money on a toilet.
Yeah. A lot of money, but it's fully programmable and I can, it's got a macerator in it too. So just in case anybody throws anything in the toilet, it usually should, you know, be able to chop it up. I also redid the, let's see, new through holes, brand new batteries. I've got a big ass lithium battery bank, a new arch, new.
Which brand of batteries did you go with?
I went with Dakota Lithium, and I love them. I'm telling you, right. Guys, the best thing I put on the boat of everything I have on it, the batteries.
Lithium batteries.
Oh, yeah. My God. What a game changer. I mean, I don't even look. You know how much, like, in my last boat, I would look at the batteries and try to get the battery voltage, and, like, I had one of those Bluetooth 712 Victron things.
Victron things, yeah.
Where you could look it up on. I would constantly look at that thing. I haven't even looked at that for a month, and it just works.
How many amp hours have you got?
I've got the equivalent of 1350 amp hours at 12 volts. So I've got like 1300. So I've got 650 amp hours at 24 volts. Mine's a 24 volt system. When you
get on a 24 volt boat.
Yeah, when you get into bigger boats, the 24 volts makes the wire smaller.
Yeah.
So it's for those big wire runs and stuff. They don't make these huge. You don't have to use like double aught wire for the whole boat. So best thing I put on the boat. Love Dakota. I actually had a couple of them die. I left the boat for a couple months and did that delivery. And when I came back, a couple of the batteries were dead because it was really my fault. But I had one of the bilge pump switches fail. And then the high bilge pump alarm was going off because a couple of the windows were leaking. And it was basically sinking on the hard. And
the
alarm was going off.
There's been a lot of water got in from rain there.
Yeah. The water was going, was the alarm was going off for a month, like beep, and nobody came and like,
yeah, I'm surprised nobody would have noticed that.
You can hear it from outside the boat. I'm surprised nobody like called me and said, hey guys, what's going on with your boat?
Oh, that's crap.
But anyway, it drained the battery below 10 volts. It didn't ruin the battery, but the BMS no longer functioned. So what I did was I called them up and I was like, guys, this is what happened. And they're like, no problem. Next day they had them out to me. Thank you very much, Dakota. And then I said, what do you want me to do with the old ones? And they're like, well, whatever. We don't want them back because it's too much money to ship them back for the margins that we make on it. So, you know, just give them to somebody or try to fix them or something. I was like, okay, cool. Well, no, they didn't tell me that. I'm sorry. That's probably a liability thing. But I said, can I fix them? And they're like, you know, they're not going to be covered under warranty. So whatever you do to them, they're yours.
Yeah.
So I opened them up and a couple of them, they're like glued in. I had to just like cut them out. And then I found the BMS and I saw like where the batteries were connected to it. And then where the BMS was connected to the terminals at the top. And then I just connected the charger right to the battery part instead of the BMS part. And that worked. And I was able to revive three of the four of them. So
nice.
I have
some spares.
Yeah. So I have some spares. So I ended up putting those in too, and they're working.
Nice.
So, I've got, let's see what else. New water heater. Man, I got so much. Oh, new plumbing for the boat. I'm redoing this boat in all Propex, the Upnor Propex. They use it for houses. It's for residential and it's all plastic. And it's got this like proprietary little thing that like opens up the, you know, you put it in and it opens it up and opens it up and opens it up. And then this plastic has a memory. And once it clamps down on the piece, you have like 3,000 PSI of pressure it can hold. And
yeah,
it can
brilliant.
And it doesn't break. And I did this on my Morgan. And it was beautiful. I did it in red for hot and blue for cold and white.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. And I'm going to do it on this boat and show everybody how to do it. Because I haven't seen any YouTube videos on anybody doing this. And the shark bite bullshit that I have with this boat that I inherited from 1993 is just... I've had it fail twice and drain my entire tank into the bilge. Had we been on passage, like we'd be screwed.
Yeah, you'd be buggered.
Yeah. Recommend it for anybody. You can do it over a weekend too. It's not hard.
Yeah, it's easy. It's just like a little clip system. Oh, that's cool. I've seen it on quite a few new boats, but I've not seen anybody like specifically refit them into an old boat or when they're doing a refit. But I think Beneteau use it on some of theirs. I'm sure I've seen them on some new Beneteaus.
I wouldn't be surprised, but
it's really easy to work with.
Yeah. There's two different types. There's you can get the PEX material, which are like shark bite fittings. Like they just, you know, clamp on when you twist them, they clamp, or when you push them, they push in like an air fitting or something. Yeah. Or you can get this one that like this, the pro version that has that opening little thing. And that's the one that I think that is better just because once it's on there, man, you got to cut it off. It's impossible to get off. And they don't leak. You don't have to worry about it. Like once it's on, I never have to worry about it again. And then you can put in like individual. I'm doing individual shutoffs for every single one of my hot and cold on my sinks. And
That is so useful, mate. Like that is one thing that if I did have more time, I might do it in the future. But I was like, so I've installed like a bunch of new faucets. I've installed like some proper full size showers on here, and I was just like, if ever I get the chance, I'm going to put taps on every single light, because you know the pain in the ass about that. If you want to change over something in your bathroom, you have to shut your water off, and if you've got a problem with that or you're losing a fitting, then you haven't got any water on. Like, so annoying.
Yeah, and otherwise you can just go in there, things leaking like a sieve, you just shut it off. You don't have time to fix it right now, great. But on a sailboat, everything is one piece. Like,
yeah,
it's not like a house. It's everything is one huge thing. So if you have one problem, it kills the whole system. And this way you can isolate it. Plus you can, if you want to, you can have like a manifold with labels and have it like going everywhere. So you can have one manifold for cold and one manifold for hot, and then it's clearly labeled, and you can have shutoffs on the manifold. It's really nice.
Yeah, that's brilliant, mate. And that's actually a really good safety feature as well, especially if you're doing big offshore passages.
Exactly.
And it's not expensive. To be able to isolate stuff.
It costs about $1,000. On my 41 foot Morgan, it costs $700, and on this one, it costs about $1,000.
Yeah, brilliant.
Great flip boat. And then let's see what else I got. I got all new life vests. I'm getting a life. I got new Gumby suits. I got those from Viking.
Oh, cool.
Very much Viking. Which are,
have you tried them all?
Cold water immersion suits. I haven't got them yet. We just got that
right.
One. And that was actually David Shee that got me that, because he's coming with me to Antarctica. I don't know how.
David Shee is going to Antarctica.
Yeah. He is a marketing wizard.
And, oh, man, he's amazing. He's such a great guy. Such a nice guy.
Yeah. Not a great sailor. He doesn't have a lot of experience, but.
Yeah, he's not done enough yet.
For just the marketing standpoint and his way that he can get, like, he's the one that got us the immersion suits. So. That right there is like $3,600 worth of sponsored gear that he's already done. He's not done yet. So I think between the videos and the marketing stuff, it was a good idea to bring him.
Yeah, brilliant. Mate, when are you actually doing this? When do you think you're actually going to be leaving South America to go to Antarctica?
I'll be crossing the Drake Passage. Well, let me see. If you go to sailingzingaro.com, you can see my whole schedule and the availability. This site was built by one of my patrons. Thank you, Graham. And I made the little maps, and I made them so you can go in and like zoom into them and stuff. And let's see,
this is an awesome website.
Thanks, buddy. In January 6th of next year, 2024. So
January 6th.
Yeah, and that'll be a month. So we're going to go from, probably Ushuaia or Puerto Williams to Deception. Deception Island is the name. And then we're going to hop down to a couple more islands, and then we're going to go to the Falkland Islands. So if you're interested in going, let me know.
Do you need sailors for that one?
I got three more spots, and I think one of them is going to be, at least one of them is going to be for somebody that's been there before and that has a little bit. Experience with that kind of that, well, with the Drake Passage, yeah, because it can be fickle, that one, like 70 knots out of nowhere kind of thing, you know. So
mate, I would come for that.
I gotta take Anna back. She really fell in love with the Med. We took her to she flew into Azores and did that passage with us, and then from there we sailed up through Gibraltar,
yeah.
And went to Valencia, and then we flew over to Malta. Have you ever been to Malta?
Yeah, beautiful place. Oh, wow. British history.
What a pretty spot. That was amazing, that place, and such a piratey island.
Yeah, I think our queen did. I think she definitely did live there for quite a while.
I liked it there. I liked it.
Yeah, you were looking at a pirate ship there, right?
Yeah. I never told anybody that because I didn't want everybody to know what I was doing. But I was looking at this like 100-year-old, 80-foot schooner there that I wanted to buy.
Just I wanted you to buy it.
I'm going to get one. That'll be the next thing. But, you know, it'll come eventually. I'm glad I have this Oyster. I really love this boat. This is like a dream boat for me. And, oh, man, I can't tell you how much I love this boat. I like you want to go through a little tangent, and then we'll go back to the thing. We're at we made it to Puerto Monterrey. So I am not going to go back to a catamaran. And I'll tell you why. I like the way and the feel and the safety and the motion of a monohull way better, like way better. It's not even a question in my mind. I was always so afraid of either flipping that boat or it like ripping apart that I never really slept well on passage on that cat. And yes, I had a,
it was a high performance cat.
Yeah, I had a high performance, very light catamaran, so it was even more of a movement when it would go into big waves and stuff. But I tell you what, man, I cannot tell you the night and day difference it is to have an Oyster and a light cat. It's so much more
comfortable. You have gone from one extreme to the other. Like that really is one extreme to the other.
Yeah. And one almost killed me, so I got a little bit of PTSD. So don't take my word for it. You like go and try it yourself, but. I'm telling you, the motion on a cat is not something that I want to deal with anymore.
Do you know, though, I think, like, honestly, if you were good, my dream boat would be a big Oyster. It would be like, you know, a mid-50s, 60-foot Oyster, something like that. Same generation as yours, the older ones, because the new ones are just like way out of my price range. But I think you definitely, with the budget that you had, I literally think you got the best boat on planet Earth available at that time for that budget. You couldn't have got a better boat.
I agree. Yeah. I think the stars aligned for me with this one. I'm super, super lucky. And Cindy, if you're listening to this, I love your boat. Thank you so much.
Has she been in touch with you? Like, has she kept in touch? Does she watch the videos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She says they make her cry because her husband died, you know,
that's a shame.
Their boat for 22 years. And but I'm sure it has a lot of nostalgia for her. But you know what, babe? It would have went to shit if it was sitting in the marina for any longer than you left it there. And I've been taking good care of it. I mean, I know you've probably seen it, but I've done a lot to this boat. Mm. Let's see. So the rest of the trip, let's just do that real quick. So we're going to go from Easter Island to Puerto Mont, and then we're going to spend, I cut it up into 1 month blocks. So a month going from Puerto Mont to Puerto Venus, a month in Patagonia with one crew, a month in Patagonia with another crew, and another month. And then we go around Cape Horn. So we're going to be there for about 4 months. And then from there, I don't have any guests, and I'm bringing in some professional sailors to go to Antarctica. And from Antarctica, we're just going to go right back to, we're going to go to Falkland Islands, because that's with the wind still. So thank you, Jenny Corno, for writing that article. And then from Falklands, and Falklands got to be a good time. There's 5,000 people on that island and 500,000 sheep.
The British people as well.
Yeah, they're Brits. Yeah.
Yeah. Or I don't know if they are technically the Brits. I don't know. It's part, Brits. Yeah. Yeah. Part of our old colonial sovereignty, anyway, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They're independent sovereignty, but they're managed by the British government.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then from there, we're going up to Mar de Plata, which is part of Argentina. So we'll go into Argentina. I want to go to Buenos Aires. Apparently, it's very difficult to sail into there because it's way, way back in. Like, it kind of goes like this. You know, it's a big channel to get in there. And then we're going to go up the coast of Brazil and then up through the Caribbean and back. So... this is going to take about a year and a half. It's 17,800 miles. And you guys can come with us if you'd like to. We're going to take four people for most of the trips. And I would love it if you guys came.
So what cabins are they booking on the boat? So if they go on, so sailingzingaro.com, if they go on that now and they book on for a leg, are they going to be in the aft cabin, the front cabin? Have you got some bunks? What's the living situation like on the boat?
I've got a big V berth. So if you're a couple, you get that. They default to that. And then I've got two bunk beds. And then I've got a quarter berth. Well, not a quarter berth, a pilot berth. I'm sorry. The pilot berth is in the salon. So they all have leak cloths. They all have new mattresses. They all are very comfortable. And six on the boat, five or six is very comfortable. We've been doing it now for about 3 months, making money in the San Blas Islands. And we've had like six charters. And I think all of them has been pretty cool. I mean, I've had some times where they're pretty funny. I mean, I got to tell you this story. This is funny as hell. So okay. The first day, first charter, they got one of my guests, all patrons. One of my patrons brings me a bottle of tequila, a nice bottle. And I open it up and I'm like, well, since you brought it out, we got to try it. And so we all try a shot. We're good to go. And one of the other patrons picks up the bottle and starts to down it. I mean, like he got almost. Yeah. Well, I wasn't upset. And then I guess he woke up at like 2 o'clock in the morning and he was on the top bunk and he went to go pee and he kind of like, fell out of the bunk. Hit his head, didn't know shit. he was bleeding profusely, went and peed, and then went and laid on my brand new white couch and then slept here. Oh. And when I woke up, I saw a massacre on this couch. I mean, it was blood everywhere, man. It was crazy. Like, and I thought the guy was dead.
I was gonna say, I bet you thought he was dead.
Yeah. Turns out it's fine. That all of the blood came out. Hydrogen peroxide works really well to get blood out of stuff. Turns out, glad I had a bottle of that. He took him about 3 hours, but yeah, there was just blood everywhere in the bathroom, on the couch. It was super funny. Afterwards,
not during. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but that's the first day, first charter. And you know what? I kind of chalked it up to is people just need to let go. Like, he's got an office job. He doesn't go on vacation very often. He's paid a lot of money to have a good time here. You know, like, I let him just go. I mean, we cut him off of the tequila at a certain point when he was going to hurt himself.
Yeah, but, so it's not every night, I suppose. But yeah, if there's a warm up, it's all right.
Yeah, I kind of already in my mind chalked these cushions up to like they're going to need replaced after this trip. I know it. It's just when they get messed up, I'm not going to get mad.
Yeah, that's the way it is. I mean, if you're taking paying customers on board, same as a hotel, you're going to have to change the sheets like probably every five or six customers. We've got Airbnbs and like, it's astonishing how many sheets we go through. Sun cream just destroys bed sheets. It destroys sofas. Serious? It destroys, just like normal sun cream that's white. It just leaves like horrible stains. I'm presuming it's that anyway. It could be something more nefarious. But yeah, that's what my wife says it is.
Otherwise,
if I start wearing some rubber gloves when I'm cleaning up in there, I don't know.
Oh man, that sucks. I'm sorry. That's shitty. But you know, yeah. I'm doing charters and stuff gets broken on charters. So I'm not going to get too mad.
Yeah.
But,
right.
Oh, no, yeah. So, I just remembered. Another thing that I changed on the boat is all new port lights and all new windows because.
Oh, nice.
When I bought the boat, they were super crazed because it was sitting on the hard for 6 years, so they were just bad. I couldn't see out anything, and they were all leaking. So, you can either rebuild these old port lights, you know, like the old Newmar hatches. You can rebuild them, but by the time you buy new plexi and new seals and new parts for them, you're in it almost the same amount of money as you are buying a new one.
Yeah, just getting the new ones. They're so expensive.
They're very expensive. Yeah, the hatches are about $1,600 and the port lights are, if I remember right, like $250 or $220 or something. But
for the little ones.
Good money I spent. If you have any problems with yours, don't try to rebuild them. Getting new seals in there is such a bitch.
Oh man, I tried it. I bought them all. I went online and this is for my old boat. It was like, you know, Lumar, the rubber with like the little teeth that hook on. That's impossible. Like getting the old ones out and cleaning them up is hard enough. Trying to get those new seals onto those Lumar hatches is a nightmare. I think it literally took me like 6 hours to get one on. It was crazy.
Yeah. And the big one, did you try to do one of the big hatches, one of the Ocean 60s or something?
Those are
even harder.
Yeah, it was probably like, I don't know, this big, something like that. Yeah, it was the one over the saloon.
That's the Ocean 60. Those are retarded. You can't do it.
Yeah, but, it was too much, mate.
Yeah. So that's the trip, man. We're super excited and we've got it pretty much set up. I'm sold out for a lot of the legs on the first half, and I'm a little unsure of what's going to happen past the Falkland Islands. So if you do want to sign up for one of those legs, just give me a call and I'll, you know, put your name on a list, but I'm not taking deposits for that because I just don't know what's going to happen once the baby's born. But up until Antarctica, all that is still 100% open. We're on schedule, and we're about to go through the canal for the second time, which is cool. That's always a good experience.
That's amazing. Right, so sailingzingaro.com, and you've got a bunch of passages available up to Cape Horn on there now. And I highly imagine after you finish this experience, mate, you're going to turn this into a life career and you're going to carry on doing it. I think you're born for this type of stuff.
I tell you what, I love it. I wasn't sure if I would love it or not, because having people aboard and then like cleaning up after them and then like having to turn over the boat is the hard part, you know?
Yeah, but you're a host. Like, you're a host, you're an entertainer, you're a social person. Like, you love being in a group, you love having drinks. It's perfect for you.
I love teaching people things. I like to share my knowledge with people. So it's been really nice to have like some people have come not and they just bought a boat and they bought their first cruising boat and they want to know how to whip lines and how to tie a bowline and how to tie a Alaskan Alpine hitch and where to use these knots the correct way. And it's really easy to show them because I'm using that stuff every day. And I'm like, you need to do it because now that I've taught you, this is how you learn.
So, man, this is such an amazing opportunity. Like, for anyone who's listening, like, there is nowhere else that you can just go and pay to be on a boat like yours, be on like a solid blue water, ocean ready, newly refit Oyster 49-foot and cross the Pacific. There's nowhere else doing that. Like, that's an amazing opportunity for anybody who wants to like go offshore. They want to do a big leg crossing like that and gain some experience from someone who's done it before, because you've done these passages before. That's an amazing opportunity.
Yeah. And so I'm offering all your viewers 5% off. Anybody that's viewing or listening to this podcast gets 5%. Just tell me you're a buddy of Andy's and you listen to the Ocean Cruisers podcast and
get and then the discount's coming your way.
Yes, brilliant. Sir.
Right, mate. I think that was a good podcast. What do you think?
Yeah, it was fun, man. It's really good talking to you, bro.
Brilliant. Right, cool, mate. Right, we'll catch you soon. And good luck. I'm looking forward to seeing you next.
All right. Peace, love. Good luck with your boat, my friend. I want to hear your version of this next time we talk.
Cheers, brother.